Canucks Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, the Mobile Kintech Studio. Canucks and Vegas Golden Knights in the season finale. This hour of Canucks Central brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light, plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Let's bring in our next guest. He is the goalie guru, also covering the Canucks at NHL.com and with In Goal Magazine. It is Kevin Woodley, and he is a presentation of White Rock Hyundai. What's happening, Woodley?
Last game day nap in the White Rock Hyundai Tucson today, boys. It's I got to say, though, as somebody who uses his vehicle as his office on game days, it's getting a little tougher to get change into the suit in the back seat as it stays lighter out late. So, maybe the hidden blessing of there being no playoff hockey is me not having to be accidentally exposed in any way, shape, or form to the public here.
Life in the White Rock Hyundai, I guess. You know, you never know what turns may come.
He's like, like the Lincoln lawyer. He's like a Lincoln broadcaster. But it's a Hyundai. Is a Hyundai instead?
I guess so. So Woodley, it's been an interesting year for the Vancouver Canucks to say the least. You know, they're obviously coming up short of the playoffs. Tonight is the finale. What is the biggest thing to blame here? Because this is a team, they're still over 90 points. With all that's gone wrong, you know, glass half full Canucks fan can say, you know, everything went wrong for this team and they still finished with 90 plus points. If they just get a few more breaks next year, maybe things can be a lot different. But obviously that's not the case this year. How do you view where things went wrong for this version of the Canucks?
Well, it's kind of a long list, right? Yeah. And I think you have to be fair in that the injuries played a big part in this, right? And so you have to tip your hat to the fact there were a lot of elements that were completely out of their control. And yet I think you would be naive if you thought that was the only reason, right? Like you can't ignore the games that were lost, the points that were pissed away with poor efforts early in the season.
Yeah.
You can't completely ignore the inability to get to their identity earlier this season, something that I think they assumed had been baked in the year before with this group. Maybe some of that is turnover. Maybe some of that is not having the right pieces fit in, you know, and so a little piece of that falls on management with some of the off-season decisions or pro scouting with some of the off-season decisions in terms of guys coming in here and not fitting the style of play they want, the style of play that Rick Tocchet demands, the type of non-negotiables in terms of defensive identity that were supposed to be part of this team. Maybe some of it falls on coaching for the focus on rush offense, which never came, but cost them seemingly in terms of the defensive play, especially early in the season, right? Like they leaned so heavily on Kevin Lankinen in the early parts of the year, not just because of Artur Shelov's struggles and no Thatcher Demko, but because they were so much looser than we were used to seeing. So, even within the players themselves, this is not the first time that this core group has followed up success by stubbing its toe. Yeah. It's not the first time, and I don't think complacency is the right word. I don't think they were, it wasn't all the time, but the inability to get to a 60-minute acceptable work rate and defensive execution and focus early in the season cost them, right? Like, so there are a lot of positives that come out of this season as well. And you're right. The fact that they're this close, despite everything I just said and despite all the injuries, bodes well for the possibility of turning it around quickly. And yet, because of some of the moves that were made in this season, because of the way it started and the way they were forced to react to it, I don't know that you look at the ceiling nearly as high as we did coming off of last year. And so there are questions to be answered about how you fix it. So, there is no easy answer here. There is no one definitive thing. And certainly a large part of it, just as Jim Rutherford said 2 years ago, everything needed to go right, and it did. And a lot of things went wrong this year, especially from a health perspective. But to pin it all on that, to ignore some of the self-inflicted wounds, to ignore some of the work rate issues, personnel issues early, the cost of solving them. I'll go right back to last summer. You know, how much did we hear 2 years ago with this group being back right out of the August long weekend and on the ice together and working together? And that didn't happen this year, right? So there needs to be self-reflection on a lot of different levels in terms of where they make up those half a dozen points that they're going to fall short, beyond just saying, hey, we'll be healthier next year. We can't have this kind of bad luck again.
Well, and I think that's, you know, what I'm really interested to see how management reacts, because management obviously made moves that worked out. DeBrusque has 28 goals on the season. Kiefer Sherwood's been one of the best bargains, right? And it's funny because we look at the blue line now and say it's pretty much figured out short-term and long-term with the young guys, DPD's emergence, yep. Hopefully Villander signing, Marcus Pettersson being here and all that, right? But when they began the season, though, the defense was far from settled. DPD wasn't here. Marcus Pettersson wasn't here. Vinny Desharnais was almost a disaster, and he was costing them goals left, right, and center to begin the year. Juulsen was doing his best, but we know his limitations. Forsberg got injured. And I think when you look back at it in hindsight, a lot of things happened that were out of their control, like injuries. We can even, you know, the JT Pettersson thing, we can say it's in or out of their control because they kept both guys, but ultimately it didn't work this year. So, you know, I don't know how we want to judge that yet, but obviously we can look at it in a lot of different ways. But I think the way they went into the season with a blue line that sorely needed more than what they had was ultimately the blow that I think hurt them early. Because if they had a better blue line to begin the year, they're probably making the playoffs despite all of this.
Yeah, and I heard you guys talking earlier. You're probably not having to focus on it the way they did and give up what now becomes, you know, potentially a lottery pick next year, assuming the Rangers keep the pick this year, you know, to solve that problem, right? You know, and so now you've got to, and I think it was Reach that said sort of rob Peter to pay Paul again in terms of you fix the defense, but at the expense of a gap up front that you now have to solve. So, you know, and seeing, you know, given the thinness of the free agent market, you know, how do they go about that this year, right? Like, you're right, Sat. They made a lot of good bets, and you didn't even include Lankinen in that. And yeah. Clearly, that was a great bet. The misses were costly. The margins were thinner because of the injuries. And again, ultimately, they couldn't overcome it for all those reasons, but also the fact that they just never got to who they were the year before. And we've talked about how hard it is to play this way. Like, there's a work rate required to play the style that they want. And they weren't able or willing to get to that level on a 60-minute basis often enough early in the season. And you have to decide whether that's just human nature or are there enough guys that have been around for enough of those step forward, two step back seasons or moments for this core group that changes are made or required or need to be made, you know, based on that as much as skill or talent, but based on the continuing theme of an inability to sort of continuously rise to the occasion or be willing to work hard enough to get there consistently enough.
So there was quite a bit of discussion about Thatcher Demko getting shut down here for these last number of games, and it was an illness, and then all of a sudden he's not coming back to play the final few games. And I think actually Rick Tocchet explained it quite well. It's just like we don't want to risk anything and just let him have a healthy off season and not risk that so that he can go in and have the clean off season that he really hasn't had for a couple of summers now. Is that the way you read it as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we heard from Tyler Myers this morning as well, right? Like, if these games mattered, he would have been back a couple of games ago. Yeah. Like, if they were still playing for something, Thatcher Demko would be back. But there is no, they're not. And there's just no point in risking anything for either guy, whether it's illness or, you know, even the most minor, anything you would play through normally. Just why take any chances? And I've been saying for a while now, I didn't know that you'd get Demko back to the level we're used to seeing from him in terms of comfort with his body and his health without getting a full off season in. And so why would you take any risk of setting that back yet again? for a guy who just really needs to have a full off season of his regular training, his regular routine. And that's going to be what gives him the best chance of having success next season. You know, and, you know, we talk about robbing Peter to pay Paul, you know, success next season, whether it's here or elsewhere, right? Because when you talk about assets, you know, as much as when we talked about this last week, I was more along the lines of, hey, healthy Demko, final year of the contract, Lankinen showing you how good he can be when he's rested this year. And let's not forget, for the first 6 weeks of the season, like, he was performing at a Vezina-level clip. If you could find a balance between the two, and you really are that determined to get back to the playoffs and not have another step back next year, does that tandem give you the best chance? And that's where I was at a week ago, but, you know, continue to sort of talk to people around the team and around the league, and you start to wonder if he might not be a guy that helps you recoup and fill some of the gaps in other places in the lineup. And so very interesting and very interested to see how the team decides to proceed with that this off season, when it comes to, you know, not just Demko, but, you know, understanding that you're going to need to fill some holes, and he might be a piece that can help do that for you.
Well, that's ultimately going to be what I'm watching for too, as far as what is the value here, because I think that value would have to be at a level that makes them want to move Demko, because I'm not sure a second round pick helps you get substantially better, that you're better off not having the tandem for next season. Like, it would have to be like the Markstrom package at a very bare minimum. And is somebody willing to give that for Demko, given his history?
And I guess we'll have to wait and see. And I'm with you, Sat. I'm not talking about trades for picks. I'm talking about hockey trades, because given what we've seen on that free agent list, that's probably what's going to be required to fill some of the holes that are left on this roster up front, right? And so whether you're, you know, including it as part of a package or however it looks, like, these are names that we've heard. This is more of a, you know, it seems that people are wondering if this might be a way they go if that option is there. And I do think that the injury risk is mitigated somewhat by the fact it's the final year of the contract. And so I don't know that there's necessarily a team that's looking at him and saying, hey, that's our 65-game starter. But if you have somebody else in place that's solid, and we see the league going towards tandems, and a team that feels they need two options, maybe even a contending team that feels they need two options, then maybe there's something there. But again, this is just, you know, this is just speculation and curiosity about seeing which way they will go. As I said last week, I was under the impression that he would be here next year and that would be their best chance. But you start to hear different things and you start to wonder, if the market is there, is that something they look to do to fill some of the other gaps? And again, there's a massive offseason, right? What did Jim Rutherford say the day he got here in that first press conference? It's about making the right moves, the right two guys in, the right two guys out. There were certainly more than two last summer, and as you pointed out, they got a bunch of them right, but they got a couple wrong. And in a season where the margins were cut thinner by injuries, the errors were costly. I don't know that they're going to have that much margin for error again, even without the injuries next season, because of the dance they're trying to do. There won't be many margins for error. And so if a guy can bring you value back, I would think they'd at least consider it.
I thought Nikita Tolopil looked pretty good the other night. What did you think?
I you know what? Absolutely. And, you know, full credit to Justin Poggi in his first year as an American Hockey League goalie coach. I talked going into that game about, you know, some of the energy and power that bleeds out of his lateral movements because of a little bit of counter rotation in his game. So you're pushing left and part of your body's going right, just the way you sort of twist to load into that turn rather than rotating early and building rotation into a powerful movement, and a tendency to reach instead of rotate as part of that. And I didn't see any of that in that game. Like, he looked a lot more controlled. I still wouldn't use the word powerful or fast, but he's such a big body that he can play conservatively, and he doesn't need to be as fast as other goaltenders east to west. And so there's still a little bit of that that energy that leaks out of his game left to right, but it's nothing like what I saw last year. This is a guy that has taken massive steps in each of the last three seasons, from the Alvenskin, from out of nowhere to the Alvenskin, to getting an NHL contract, having multiple teams interested, choosing Vancouver in large part because of Ian Clark at the time, having his first year in the American Hockey League, taking steps and taking even more steps this year at his size. There's a lot to like there. Now, it also doesn't hurt that the San Jose Sharks didn't generate a single high danger chance by clear sight, and I'll get to the Celebrini one in a minute, but didn't generate a single high danger chance and had less than one expected goal. And that you know, you look at that Celebrini tuck and bar down from the dot, that's where you raise an eyebrow at analytics, even ones as good as clear sight, because that shot to me is not on Nikita Tolopil. That's just a hell of a shot by a hell of a player in a perfect spot. And yet the reality is that open looks, time and space, head up, even on the power play from that area of the ice, go in less than 8% of the time. The challenge is most guys don't hit the spot as well as Celebrini does, right? So analytics don't typically account for shot-by-shot basis every location of the net, and I think you got to tip your hat when a guy rips one as beautifully as Macklin did there. But again, the numbers are the numbers. Less than 8% of those have gone in the league this season from that spot. Open looks, time and space, head up, and have a rip. So a little bit of both. At the end of the day, don't blame it on him. But the reality is it was a nice controlled environment in front of him, and he looked very controlled behind it. The question, and we'll see if we get an answer to this, obviously not playing tonight, but if we'll get a chance to see it in the future and in the NHL, that he'll have to answer if and when that opportunity arises, is can he keep up east-west as the game gets more dynamic and a little faster than what we saw out of the Sharks in terms of at least getting shots at net. There were moments I thought that was a quick game at times. Maybe they didn't all end up in shots, and I think you can look at that film and say, for the most part, he did keep up. He didn't get behind. He managed his depth well, made his route short around his crease. There's a lot to like about that. But anytime you have a game with that few quality chances, you really do need to at least add that grain of salt.
Before we let you go, too, I've got to ask you about Kevin Lankinen. He gets the final start of the season as well. And his last three starts, he has looked better, at least from the way I've seen it. He gave up 3 goals against Vegas, 3 goals against Minnesota, losing in overtime. But he has a .930 save percentage over his last 3 starts. Is he showing that if they have to rely on him as the guy next year, that he can regain that form?
Well, I think anytime he's had enough rest, he's been that guy, right? Like, and so, yeah, like the stats fell off, and notably after the Four Nations and even a little bit leading into it. But that's just the reality of a guy doing something he's never done before. There's going to be steps. There's going to be steps back anytime you get into territory you've never had to manage before. You lose the ability to work on your game. You're focused on your rest and your body. Fatigue creeps in. He's a guy that plays, you know, I wouldn't say super aggressive, but at his size, it takes a little more ice. And if you take a little more ice, that means you got to move a lot more to get from spot to spot. It means your game requires more energy. You know, he's a guy that is exceptionally quick, but I wouldn't necessarily put the word power behind it. When he goes, say, top of the right crease back to the left post, sometimes there's 2 pushes there. That's a lot of energy. And again, much like Tolopilo, a tendency for energy to sort of leak out with a little bit of counter rotation and not sort of getting that first good rotation into angle. And so he needs a couple extra pushes and a little extra motion and a little bit of extra energy expended. And so those are things you can still continue to improve on. You know, everything I've heard about Kevin Lankinen from goalie coaches he worked in the past and Marco here heading into this season, he's not going to be shy to do that, right? Like, he's going to look for next steps. The fact that he's been able to reset, get a little bit more rested physically and have the types of performance we've seen in the last 3. Like, I think that's just a reminder of how good this guy can be, why he earned this contract. You know, because it's easy to forget just how damn good he was early this season, and you're getting a little bit of taste of it now. And that's a good thing heading into next year, even though the caveat is he'll need to make some adjustments in the offseason. He'll be better for it next year. But you do sort of have to have an eye towards, man, can we afford to be looking for 50 to 55 games from Kevin Lankinen next season, especially given, I believe, there's a really good chance he'll be at the Olympics as well. And we saw what the Four Nations did to some guys this year. And so you have to consider that next season as well. You better have a plan B coming out of the Olympic break that can help you mitigate his minutes and not run him into the ground the way they were forced to this year.
Yeah, and that also entails a mid-season trip over to Europe for next year's Olympics as well. Kevin, we appreciate
it. Think of this pros reach.
Yeah. Well, do I get to go? Because then there's a lot of pros. I should be the resident Italian at the Olympics. That should.
They'll all come back refreshed. Just load up with the Spros on the plane ride home, and they'll all be fine.
They'll all be great.
Come and make Spros on the long charter back.
Woodley, you're the best. Appreciate the time as always. Thanks for this.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Been a fun season. I look forward to catching up and getting into playoffs, even if the Canucks aren't part of it, over the next weeks and months.
Absolutely. There is Kevin Woodley on Sportsnet 650, and he is brought to you by White Rock Hyundai. Visit the showroom on King George in White Rock or whiterockhyundai.com.
The Hyundai broadcaster.
Coming up, yes. That's very right. I haven't watched The Lincoln Lawyer. Is there is that the tie-in?
I've seen a couple of episodes on here and there or whatever, but I remember the movie itself with Matthew McConaughey.
Right.
I watched that. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Overrated, Underrated is coming up next on Canucks Central.
The most opinionated Canucks show out there, Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drans. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.